You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Talking with God.
Everybody, this is Adam, and I want to welcome you to the Conversation Podcast. Wherever you are, I hope you are doing well. We are a few weeks into this brand new year, a few weeks into 2020. If you set a resolution this year, I pray for faithfulness, for God's self-control to fill you, to keep on going with that. I did not set a resolution this year. I did, however, this feels like a confession. I did kind of pray and really ask God for a word this year. And so I have a word. I listened to a pastor acquaintance that I have. It's a guy that I want to cross paths with, Darren Patrick. He talked about kind of setting a word. You can go on his Instagram and find that. And so I did choose a word for this year, which feels weird. And yet I'm excited about what God wants to do in 2020 in and through my even just myself. And so I just want to encourage you, though. If you did set a resolution, if you did have a word, that's awesome. Don't get discouraged if you didn't. There's nothing different about a new year. I mean, it's a different calendar on your wall. I got a new calendar for Christmas, actually, but it's a new calendar. But otherwise, it's just a new day, and every day is a new day with God. And so His mercies are new every morning. So don't get discouraged if you're a few weeks in and it's fallen by the wayside. Instead, today, ask God for strength, for self-control, for guidance, for discernment to follow Him faithfully today. And so that's my word of encouragement in today's episode. I sat down and connected with Clay Scroggins. He's a pastor and a person and a leader that I've actually wanted to connect with for some time. We sat down, we talked about really his journey into ministry. He's got some crazy experience being connected with the North Point team, with Andy Stanley. And so we talked about that. We talked about distractions and emotions and really dealing with our emotions. That was probably my favorite personal part of our conversations, just dealing with emotions. You'll hear me talk on a regular basis about emotionally healthy spirituality, a book and kind of a course that's impacted me in so many ways. And this was a lot of similar conversation from that. And so I'm excited for you to listen to that. I think that's everything I got for you. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, I'm sitting here with Clay, and Clay is somebody that I've seen and admired from afar. We were trying to figure out if we've ever been in the same place together through mutual friends, but I don't think we have. And so when I got this opportunity to sit down with Clay, I could not jump at it fast enough. Clay, I'm honored that you're on the podcast with me.
Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate being here. I do agree. The mutual friends that we have are wonderful people. Feels like we got a lot in common. This is a long time coming.
It is a long time coming. And the mutual friends we have are some of the most like connecting people in Christian world, I think. Yeah, just people who love, they just love to get a random bunch of Christian leaders in the same room together. So it's almost a surprise. And I have no doubt that at some point we will end up in the same room. Clay, just to jump into things, if someone's never met you before, if you want to give us the high level view,
yeah,
and if you want to answer, if you really do have five kids, is that a true statement or?
It is true. I've never had anybody ask that. Is it actually true?
Yeah,
my wife and I, we have five kids. That it's amazing how you go from one to two and everybody's like, oh, you got your hands full. You go from two to three and it's like you're entering into definitely another level. You go to four and people are like, oh wow, I don't know why, but the jump from four to five has been like, hey man, seriously, what are y'all like, what's going on? Like, what are you trying to do? So it is wild how, it's just been that has definitely been a thing. Yeah. My quick bio, I grew up in, Tuscaloosa, Alabama. They play football there currently as we're recording this podcast. They're in complete mourning over losing to LSU. I'm dead serious. I text my mom. I'm like, hey, how's dad doing? She's like, oh, he's on suicide watch. And I'm like, mom, that's not actually a funny joke to make, but they're just crazy about Alabama football there. So anyway, grew up there, graduated from high school in Tuscaloosa and moved to Atlanta, Georgia to go to Georgia Tech to study. Georgia Tech really specializes in engineering.
Yeah.
And I studied engineering there, and I was a good high school student. I was not a good college student. I was out of my league. It was a harder level of college than I was equipped for. And so I really struggled in college, but I was determined to stay and graduate with this engineering degree. So I make this joke all the time whenever I'm telling my bike, but it's not really a joke. It's the genuine truth. I told the registrar when I had to go work out like a class situation because I had failed a couple of classes. I said, hey, listen, I am going into ministry. I'm going to go study theology when I graduate. And so if you give me this degree, I promise you, I will never use it. And so I was trying to give her some comfort to know that, hey, it's not like you're releasing this engineer into the world that's going to go misuse this degree. I'm not even going to use this degree. So I have stayed good on my word. I moved to Dallas, Texas, and went to Dallas Seminary. While I was in Atlanta, though, the best thing that happened to me was I'd gotten involved with North Point Community Church. So I was a high school volunteer. It was my church. I mean, I had been a part of that church for 5 years from 1998 to 2003, just as a volunteer, and loved it. And I had a faith coming into it, but God certainly used North Point in a massive way in my life just to really, I guess it birthed this desire to do ministry, vocational ministry for me. So moved to Dallas, Texas to go to seminary, graduated from Dallas Seminary, which was great. But the best thing that happened is I met my wife there. She is a Texas A&M Aggie, and she was attending Dallas Seminary as well. And so we met in seminary and moved to Atlanta. I helped start one of our campuses doing student ministry. Then I went to North Point to do student ministry. Then I moved into the campus pastor world, and I'm on my third campus pastorship. So I was the campus pastor at a church called Brownsbridge, one of our campuses. And then I moved to Alpharetta, which was our original campus called North Point. And then just 3 months ago, moved into the city of Atlanta to lead our location called Buckhead Church. And so that's where I am now. And yes, we have 5 kids ranging from 10 to 2.
Oh my gosh. I have 4 children. And if we ever had a 5th, I would cry for months and months and months. Back to your first go around at North Point when you were in college. One of the things I feel like I haven't done well at the church I pastor is raising people up and really helping people kind of find their call into ministry.
Sure.
What did that look like for you specifically, and what shifted away from maybe struggling with school? What shifted that inside of you to consider ministry? And was it something are your parents involved in? Like, what do they do occupationally?
Yeah. Yeah. My mom's a school teacher and my dad is in sales. And so they've never, but they are Jesus followers. And so faith was always a big deal in our family, but they're lay people, grew up in a Baptist church. I do have a cousin who's a pastor who kind of paved the way for my generation and our family, at least.
Oh, yeah.
As an acceptable profession, I guess.
Yeah.
But it was not, I mean, that was a hard conversation telling my parents this is what I wanted to do. I think they had hopes and dreams that I would go make a lot of money doing something different. But in the end, obviously they're all for what I'm doing now. But yeah, you know, one of the things, I mean, this, you know, probably the most common question I get is, hey, what's it like working with Andy Stanley? And one of the things I appreciate about him, Andy's kind of a no BS guy in the best of ways.
Yep.
Some of the church, overly church language even that we use, he just, maybe even, I think he would probably even say to a fault, is just very skeptical of. And so even calling has always been a struggle for me personally, but I feel like it really aligns with the way I feel like Andy talks about calling, which he tells a story in his own life of, I didn't necessarily feel called to go into ministry. I just wanted to. And so he said he had this conversation with his dad asking him, hey, can I volunteer to do ministry? Meaning, can I say, hey, God, this is what I want to do. Would you be okay with that? Which, of course, the answer is, well, for sure. And in some ways, that probably is some people's definition of a calling, is what is the desire of your heart and how do you want to spend your time and your life?
Yep.
And how do you want to best align your gifts and your passions with what God is doing in the world. So that's pretty true of my own story as well. I didn't necessarily, you know, I didn't have this God spoke to me moment and said, hey, you will go into ministry. But it, for me, it just was, it was what I was most passionate about. And ever since I was little, I wanted to have impact with my life. And so obviously one of my tensions, or probably a negative side of that, is, you know, that secular sacred divide of feeling like, well, the next step in growing in your faith in Jesus, with Jesus, is to go into full-time ministry, which obviously that's not true.
Yeah.
But it was true for me. It was just what I was most passionate about. When I was a small group leader at our church as a volunteer, it's what I looked forward to. It's what I thought about. It's what I prayed about. It's what I was most excited about. Seeing people grow in a relationship with Jesus, seeing people come alive in their faith, is what I was most excited about. And so ministry made the most sense for me.
So you went to Dallas then. Did you know you were coming back?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to come back, but I didn't. There was no assurance of a job necessarily. But that was a bizarre thing too, because I never, you know, I was graduating from this college where, you know, just like most colleges, where everyone's sending out resumes going, am I going to go work for GE, or am I going to go work for Arthur Anderson or Anderson Consulting, or am I going to go work for Coca-Cola or Delta, something like that? And it didn't matter if you liked Delta, you were looking for a job. And so when people were graduating from seminary and sending out resumes, that blew my mind that somebody would go work at a church that they didn't want to attend. I mean, I would be like, well, have you ever been to whatever church in Topeka, Kansas? You haven't? Well, how are you going to go work there? And so, yeah, for me, it wasn't necessarily a call into ministry. And this sounds terrible. I think at this point in my life, it's certainly a call to ministry. But at that point, it was, I want to go work at this church that I have fallen in love with, and I'm just going to get prepared, to get best prepared to go do that.
That's incredible. I feel like in different environments, there's things that you just absorb that you don't even know you're absorbing.
That's right. Yeah.
Can you give a handful of those things? It could be from the first time at North Point to now the second time being a part and connected. What are a few things that you're just like, after being there for some time and also now seeing a bunch of different environments, different churches, has there been a few that you were just like, man, these are three things I wish everybody could experience that I just got to?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the first thing is we use this phrase a lot, know that they're in the room, meaning everyone's in the room, that there are Jesus followers that are in the room, faith's the biggest deal in their life, but there's also people that don't really care about faith and are kind of turned off by it, in fact, and maybe a friend brought them, or maybe their parents drug them to church, or maybe the husband said, hey, this is what we're doing Sunday, whatever. So on Sunday, for example, we had a speaker who made a pretty negative statement toward evolution. And this was a guest speaker. And I remember, it was yesterday, but I was talking to our team about it, just being like, it is amazing how much that sticks out. We would never make a negative statement about evolution because we don't really care what you believe about evolution. We want you to wrestle with the resurrection of Jesus. And we know that there are people who will hear that negative statement toward evolution and go, you have just discounted, I'm going to now discount everything else you say because you just made that statement about evolution, when it doesn't matter initially, and at least in the way I see faith. You know, if we were to drop into a first century person and just say, hey, let's talk about Jesus, we wouldn't start with, so what do you think about creation? We would start with, hey, bro, have you heard that Jesus died and was resurrected? That's where you would start. So for us, that's probably the first big one. And it was just yesterday was such a great example of that because it just stuck out so much. I would say another one would be choosing trust over suspicion. It's another phrase that we use all the time that I just picked up quickly, that we just want to be people that give people trust immediately. And then when there's a gap in trust, when it's broken, you start to feel yourself being suspicious. Somebody shows up late for the third time and you go, oh no, I think there's a pattern here. I think they might have a problem, or I think there must be something going on, to go and confront and to go and say, hey, in love, you know, hey, is everything okay? This didn't seem like what I know to be, or what I even want to be true about you, but you were late again. Is everything okay? So that cultural distinction has been so important for our culture on working on staff, I think.
Is that something that is really in, connected with staff? Is that volunteers? Like, is that that value? Is that something you see church-wide, or really is that kind of with your immediate team?
Yeah, I would say, you know, truthfully, I would, if I were giving us a grade, I would say we've done a pretty good job of it on our staff. We have not done as good of a job of it working on volunteer teams.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got that rescue mentality with church staff, you know, hey, something's going wrong on our volunteer team. I better call someone at the church and get them to come fix this. Yep. Kind of like the church is the police, you yep. know, that when you yep. have a car accident, we got to come have somebody come and administer some justice here. Yep. I would say we've got too much of that going on right now, and we probably need to infuse some, hey, we're all believers and God has given us this way. 1 Corinthians 13 says we want to be people who always hope and always believe and always trust. But when that's broken, let's go and have a conversation with the person and not pick up the phone and call the church and say, come fix this. So I would give us a solid grade on our staff, and I would say that's an opportunity to improve on our volunteer team and certainly inside of our church.
Yeah. I cut you off. Was there one other thing that you feel like you've learned?
I would just say the standard of excellence. I think this comes from Andy Stanley's an Enneagram 1. And so he is a perfectionist, and he just has a high standard and just really wants to be, if we're going to do it, he wants us to do it really, really well. And I really love that. That's a challenge for me because I'm a little bit more, let's do it 88% well or 90% well, and then let's go attack the next problem. You know, I've even heard Craig Rochelle talk about their video team. He told his video team one time, I don't want you to think motion picture. I want you to think 5 o'clock news. Like, you got to get it ready for the 5 o'clock news. Turn it around quick and then get ready because we're going to do it again tomorrow. We're more, no, if you're going to do it, it needs to be a motion picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's expensive and it's limiting on our ability to grow. But it's what people love about our church. I mean, it really is, people come and experience a really high quality level of production and ministry, and I think it's just what people come to expect, which I think is really remarkable.
One knick-knacky question on that. How do you have a culture that keeps it, and I'm sure this creeps in at times, maybe more so than a person thinks, how do you keep that standard from being, oh, this is something Andy's really particular about, we don't want to upset him, to yeah. like, no, this is something that we are. Is that a dance, too, that needs to be kind of played out a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're right on. I would say there's probably too much of that right now. The great thing about Andy is he is so accepting of honest feedback. It's really remarkable. However, the creep of what does he think and what does he want and what is he feeling and what's upsetting him, it's as real today as it's ever been. But we just had this same conversation last week because we were doing somebody who's in charge of kind of runs our staff development stuff was doing a staff meeting, was planning out our next all-campus, multi-campus staff meeting. So there'll be about 600 people at this thing. And they said, hey, I got an idea. I want to do, you know, not everybody gets to interface with Andy a lot. And so I want to do, what question would you want to ask Andy if you could sit down and ask him anything? And so they sent out the email, and there were probably like 150, 180 questions submitted. And so he had put them all in categories and brought them to Andy's leadership team. And so we walked through them about a couple weeks ago, and we were supposed to have the staff meeting last week. And I brought up that same concern, you know, that you just expressed. But this is what's so amazing about Andy is that he was so open to it, that he's not defensive about it or even critical of me. I just said, hey, Andy, one of my concerns about doing this is that it puts your opinion at the center of everything that we're doing. And I think that I don't want that to be the message that gets sent. You know, what do we think about racial healing or racial reconciliation? I mean, that was a lot of questions about that. Just what are we doing? And are we doing enough? And are we doing what other steps can we take? I don't want the answer to be, well, let's figure out what Andy thinks and then let's go accommodate to that, because all of us ought to be thinking about this.
Yes.
All of us ought to be processing it. But that's, so anyways, I brought that up and he's like, absolutely. And to the point where, and there were some other factors at play as well, but he actually delayed he said, let's wait until next time to do this because I want to think through that a little bit more before we just go do the staff meeting. That's a, hey, let's figure out exactly what Andy thinks about all these hot topic questions. So yeah, that's a real tension. I feel like a lot of it has to do with the leader. I mean, the leader has to pay attention to that and has to fight against that, which is difficult because you love it when they figured out that you like Reese's Pieces and they put it in every room that you walk into. Like, that's a great thing. Or yep. when they go get your car for you because they don't want you to be late. I mean, all that stuff's great. But I think as leaders, we have to fight against that creep, or else it'll just become, let's figure out what Adam thinks and what Adam wants and what Adam is bothered by.
Clay, thanks for sharing even those things. And I know it might feel even boring to share from your end, and yet it's gold when you're not in the environment and atmosphere itself. I know for myself, even as you were talking, the impact that even Andy's latest book, Irresistible, has been incredible on me. I sat down with a guy who's a science background. He looks at maps of the globe basically on a daily basis, and he was wrestling with some things. And I just brought it back to the resurrection, death and resurrection of Jesus. Instead of trying to prove the existence of every single Bible verse in the entire Bible, of like, hey, let's start with this right here. And then this right here can kind of help figure out a lot of other things. And so thanks for letting me ask that.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
This podcast is sponsored by Denison Ministries, which is a movement creating 7 million culture-changing Christians who are committed to carrying out the truth of the gospel to their sphere of influence through a variety of different ways, which is why Denison Ministries is excited about sponsoring what God is up to on the Conversation podcast. One of the cool ways Denison Ministries helps Christians feel closer to God is through their first 15 devotional. First 15 is designed to help you spend the first 15 minutes of your day experiencing God through scripture, worship, and prayer. You can sign up for First 15 email devotional at first15.org/subscribe or start your day off with First 15 devotional podcast anywhere that you listen.
The remainder of the time, I just want to talk about your latest book, How to Lead Well in a World of Distraction. Where did it come from? What's your overall heartbeat? And what's your hope for someone that reads it to take away with it?
Yeah, it's really a book on self-leadership. And that's been one of the fun things for me to talk about, is the distraction side of it was really just a way to get into it, because I do think it's the culprit. It's the enemy of our growth as humans and as leaders, that we get so distracted, and not that we get distracted, but that we control our distractions and we keep our fingers on the dial of our distractions. And instead of paying attention to those things inside of us that we need to pay attention to and be ruthless about confronting and dealing with, and even sometimes eradicating, or even working through or talking through or courageously facing up to, it's just easier to turn up the distraction, turn up the noise. Where it came from is, it came from my own soul and my own, it's amazing how everyone in my life can tell me I need to change, and it's still easier for me to tell them that they're all wrong and to stay the same than it is to actually face up to it and change. And I just started sensing that in my own life. And I started really, as I was working with, people that were in their 20s is where I started with it. But then I started seeing it everywhere. We are raising a generation, I think, that is less able to deal with their own emotions because there is so much distraction. And I don't accuse them for it. I'm actually quite sympathetic. I feel like, you know, everybody younger than me and you, what they're facing is, it's at least a different struggle than we've ever faced before. Yes. I think it's a more difficult struggle than we've ever faced before because of how much there is to deal with. There's just so much more information. There's so much more access. There's so much more availability to technology and to learning and to relationship than there's ever been before. And we don't know how to steward it well. We don't know how to deal with it well. And I think one of the dangers is that it keeps us from actually wrestling with some of the stuff inside of us that we need to wrestle with. So that's where it came from. So what I want, you know, my hope and dream for the book is that people would read it, and then they would make a conscious decision to turn down the noise low enough and long enough to be ruthlessly curious of their emotions, because it's what great leaders do. And it really is the key to becoming a more emotionally healthy person, which is the key to becoming a better leader.
You shared just like about things that you began to feel the need to address inside yourself.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to dive into like what is that practically looked like, and what were some of those things inside of you?
I'll just share this quick story that I think unfortunately shines a light on it. But we have a lot changing in our organization, really trying to match what's changing in the world. I mean, the world, it is remarkable how much the world has changed. I mean, we had a staff meeting last week, just our Buckhead Church staff meeting, where I just opened it up saying, hey, you know, our church started in 1995. Can you go back and think of your life in 1995? And about five people out of our 75 people that work at Buckhead Church, about five of them weren't even born in 1995, which is so sobering, you know? And then I go, well, let's just talk about life. If you can even remember it, you know, what was life like then? Like, what's different? And when you start listing out the things that were, I mean, it feels like a different world. It feels like a whole different deal. I mean, somebody said, oh yeah, I remember my mom had a bag phone. Somebody else goes, what's a bag phone? And I'm like, this is wild. You don't even know what a bag phone is. So anyway, so the world has changed so rapidly that we're trying to match that in the way we're doing ministry. I mean, that line, I think Craig Rochelle gets credited for it, but to reach people that no one's reaching, you got to do things no one's doing. Another line would be that your systems are perfectly set up for the results that you're currently getting. That's an Andy Stanley quote. But I think when you combine those two things, we're just going, hey, we've got to break what's happening right now, because we can't keep doing what we're doing and expect different results. We've got to do something different if we want to break through and see even more growth than we've seen in the past. So anyway, in light of all of that, I was putting all of this, I started internally putting more and more of my worth in results and putting more and more of my worth in performance. And I'm sitting in front of my boss one day having a conversation about a spreadsheet about how we were measuring our staffing size at our campuses. So this should be a non-emotional black and white conversation. It's just a discussion on percentages and numbers and ratios and counting stuff.
My soul is not tied to this. My soul is not.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Exactly. And I start feeling emotion rise up in me, like tearful emotion. And I try to push it back down and go, now's not the time. You're sitting with your boss, you know, chill. And the emotions are like, no, no, no. We're coming out right now. Like, this is the moment. And I started crying. I actually lost it in front of my boss, like to the point, you know, one of those cries where I'm like, first of all, I don't even know why. And he kept asking me, is everything okay? And I kept saying like, yeah, I'm fine. And when I'm saying it, I'm like, of course I'm not fine. Well, I'm sitting here crying about a spreadsheet. No, I'm not fine. But the problem is I didn't know what it was. I didn't know where it was coming from. I didn't know what was causing it. And this little emotional breakdown for me, it led me to this season of some noise canceling habits that I had been forsaking or avoiding that gave me some clarity to be able to see what was going on inside of me. And what I started realizing over the next couple of weeks is that I have this fear of being perceived as a failure. I've got this deep desire to achieve that is keeping me from actually growing. Which, that's the odd thing, is that the desire to be seen as successful was actually keeping me from being successful. But I was masking it or avoiding it, not dealing with it. And fortunately, that episode caused me to have some of those discussions, to turn down the noise low enough and long enough and be ruthlessly curious of those emotions. Because, of course, getting underneath those emotions is the real work. You know, going, okay, well, why do you feel like you need to be successful? Well, because it'll give me worth. Okay, why do you feel like your worth is attached to better numbers, a better scorecard? You just want to dismiss it all and say, well, we're not going to measure anything. Well, no, I don't want to do that. Okay, well, then let's get underneath that. And what would a loving father do with what you're wrestling through? So that was my episode, my painful episode.
Are you a three on the Enneagram?
You know, I'm a hard seven.
Hard seven. Okay.
Yeah. And I've got probably an eight wing, but I definitely have this deep desire for achievement. I mean, I remember, I mean, the reason why I wrote a book in the first place was because I did a breakout at Catalyst, and or I think they called it a lab. I mean, this is probably 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're giving me the tour. Have you done one of the, I'm sure you probably have, Adam.
Yeah, I've done. I did a lab a couple of years ago, probably 2-3 years ago.
So they, I'll never forget the moment where they're like, you know, I get there whatever, however early, and they're walking me around, you know, going like, hey, this is the room. Come back here. We'll get you mic'd up. This is, you know, this is who's going to be in here. And then we walk up, you know, they're like, let's show you out this. Let me show you this out here. And they say, hey, these, we've got these, you know, bar top tables, high top tables where you can put your book and do your book signing afterwards. And I was like, well, y'all can move those because I don't have a book. So, but I'm like, that's amazing that your assumption would just be that I would have a book. And then I started, you know, later on, I was like looking through the lineup of who was speaking, and I was like, oh, everyone has a book. So for me, it was like, okay, well, if that's what you need to be able to open up a door and have influence with people, then I'll go figure that out. And so yep. That's really what led me. I mean, truth. I mean, that's like the God honest truth that I'm not proud to share, but that's the truth. I mean, I was like, all right, well, if that's what it takes to have influence with people, then I will go do that. And of course, on good days, it's healthy ambition. It's God, I want to reach people. I want to have influence with people. I want to see people grow in their faith. And on the bad days, it's, you know, I'm myself, my life is at the center of my universe, and I want more. That's the danger of Christian ministry, is that we use language like, well, I just want to have more influence, or I want to open up more doors, or I want God to open up more doors. And truthfully, it's, I just want to be on a stage to be seen. That's the negative side. That achievement has always been in me for sure.
When you had that moment, can you, if you're, and don't feel like you have to, but what were some practical steps that you took to getting healthy? Like when you saw that sign, I know for me, a sign for me that I've even told my team is if you start to see me being short on anything.
Yeah. Those like, are like little buoys. Yeah.
Like just, I mean like that for me, cause I'm not a quick to anger person naturally at all. And so if you see that in me, would you care for me enough to just say, hey, Adam, that doesn't seem like you?
Yeah.
Cause I've probably went through two good seasons where I've been kind of a mess as far as burnout and just not feeling like I have a soul. So I'm a 3 high achiever.
Yep.
And again, it's even something I've been praying even through this last year is where is a healthy drive like that comes
right.
from God?
That's right. Yeah.
And what is the drive that comes from me? Cause I don't want any of the drive that comes from me, but I want all of the drive that comes from God.
Yeah.
And so Lord, you help me to decipher that. And that's such a fine line. And it actually might even be the same exact thing, just done out of a different reason.
Different motive. That's right.
You know what I mean? That's something I've been wrestling with. But from that moment, if you'd be willing to share, like, what did you do to start to dig out?
The subtitle of this book, How to Lead in a World of Distractions, are 4 simple habits for turning down the noise. And they really are, I mean, they're simple. The first book that I wrote, How to Lead, We're Not in Charge, gave me opened up so many doors for me to have conversations with businesses and for-profit organizations. I wrote it for church leaders, but the business world, and Atlanta's got there's a lot of great opportunity here because there is, I mean, it's not New York and it's not LA, but there's a lot of businesses that are headquartered here. So there's a lot of opportunity for that. And what I found is a lot of Jesus followers that go to our church that just want to have influence at the work and their workplace, they started using me as a kind of a partner in ministry at work, where they would bring me in and say, hey, would you come talk about leadership? But it would open up doors for them to invite people to church or to have spiritual conversations with people. So this book I wrote, How to Lead in a World of Distraction, these habits are really spiritual disciplines that I try to just put simple terminology on so that they would be easily accessible. Howard Hendricks, when I was at Dallas Seminary, he used to say, hey, remember, Jesus told us to feed the sheep, not the giraffes, so keep it on the lower shelf. So I really do like, I'm a fan of the lower shelf. I'm not, we've got people like John Piper and Tim Keller and even Andy's book, Irresistible. We've got books like that that are for the more thoughtful Christians, but I really wanted to put stuff on the lower shelf just to be able to, and also that's what was really true of my life. So some of those practices were getting quiet, really fighting for simplicity in my life. I keep my schedule gets overly complicated. My desires, what I'm working on can get overly complicated, and fighting for really truly finding simplicity is a pathway to finding what's most important, to finding what my spine really is, my why, the mission of my life, really practicing a Sabbath, which I've titled that pressing pause. I mean, that's really fasting or Sabbath. It's all about turning down the noise. It's about shutting down work, or even fasting from. Last week I had to do a colonoscopy. That's probably too much information for sure. But I've got a sister that had a precancerous polyp. And so everybody in our family had to do a colonoscopy. And I had to do a day-long fast. And I haven't fasted from food in a while. And it made me realize I think food has too much control over me, that I'm seeing it less as fuel and more as a release or a place to turn to. And that's that fast, the forced fast, taught me that. I wouldn't have found that if I didn't turn down the noise. And so, you know, a lot of times we associate fasting with food, but you can fast from anything. I mean, really, and we should, because anything can be a drug. Any whatever it is that you reach for, whatever it is that you're grabbing, that you find yourself reaching for in those moments where you feel restless or feel discontent or don't know what to do or experiencing pain inside or worthlessness or inadequacy or loneliness or frustration or any of those things, whatever it is you reach for, that's what we should be pressing pause on. Just not forever, but for a day or an hour or a month or however long, just to be ruthlessly curious of what those emotions are. Why am I looking to food as a source of comfort? That's not the point. That my tongue, my appetite was designed not for the pleasure of this world, but to keep me healthy and to keep me nourished to be able to be as effective as possible for the sake of the kingdom. But that's not what food had become. So anyway, some of those simple habits that are just really spiritual disciplines, I had just lost the rhythm because I was, you know, burning the candle at both ends. And it's amazing how simple it is. I mean, I think I saw this tweet the other day. It was like, hey, here's a recipe for ruining your life. Don't get good sleep, stop exercising, quit eating healthy, and work all the time. You know, I mean, it really is amazing how so many solutions in life are the simplest things, that it's keeping healthy rhythms in life. So that's really what I found in my own life as well.
It's the simplest things, but just as your title even, but it's getting harder and harder and harder to live out.
It absolutely is. Yeah.
I just even, my house is a 1907 house, which is fairly old for this part of the country.
Wow.
And one of my neighbors just told me that all of the houses on our street, when they were built, none of them had plumbing or electricity.
Wow.
And I even just think about how much that would have changed. I mean, sun goes down, you got to get your like candle out or like your kerosene lamp out. Otherwise, you just go to bed, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's
right. So it's like you're not – there's night owls like, yep, you go to sleep because you can't see anything.
Yeah,
I just think about how much that has even changed, just how we're wired, how what our rhythms look like as humans, just even in the last 100 years, how much that's changed. Clay, one last question I got for you. Away from work, away from leadership, away from whatever, what do you feel like you're currently learning in your relationship with Jesus? Has there been something that you feel like God has been teaching you recently?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, I wish I had a better, more spiritual answer. Do you struggle separating what you're preaching on and what God's teaching you?
Constantly.
I mean, I feel like that is a battle for pastors, but it's so hard because here comes Sunday all the time. So you got to have something to talk about and may as well integrate those two. Well, here's what God's teaching me. So anyway, I'm doing I started a series on Sunday called God Just Wants Your Money. And it's really just about how he doesn't need your money. And it's just a way to talk about stewardship. So that's what I've been thinking about the last month, is how do I help people understand what it means for God, that God owns it all, and how that should reframe everything that we do, how we see our time and our stuff and our work in a real healthy way. So that's what I've been thinking about the most.
Yeah.
Also because I'm preaching on it.
Yeah. Well, it changes everything when we really grasp that.
Yep.
Everything from our position to our status to anything we do. Well, Clay, thank you so much for just taking the time to sit down. Thank you for writing a book that's desperately needed. As you're talking, you're preaching right at myself the entire time. Just thanks for your leadership and for being the person that you are.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing this podcast, Adam. We need more resources like this for church leaders. So thank you.
for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.